We were here last week. You remember that we were starting a new quarter, and we started with our subject, which is God's holy priesthood. We're talking about the Levitical priesthood down to the Christian priesthood. We spoke about the idea that we, as Christians today, are called priests. We used a couple of references in the Bible as kind of a review to get us going. What are some of the references we used, or what would you share with somebody as to why you would say that we are priests today? First Peter, chapter 2, verse 9. Looks like Karen may be there. What's it say for us, if you are?
You are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His wonderful light.
All right. We thank you. And again, this is kind of a foundational passage for us, so it's one to kind of keep in mind. What's another one right before that we use too? Just a few verses before. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 5 also speaks about us being priests. Karen, since you're there, if you want to. Thanks.
You also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ.
All right. I would encourage you to be thinking of these and to get these implanted in your mind. As I prepared this actually as a sermon, I mentioned last time I prepared a sermon a couple months ago and then developed it into a class. But as I sat down to start it, I had to remind myself exactly where it was that I would go to establish that we are priests today. Last week we got to the point where we were up to where we're going to be talking about today, and that is the garments of the priesthood. We had mentioned that we're going to be going to Exodus chapter 28. So if you will, you might turn back to Exodus 28 as we begin here. What we're going to be looking at then are the garments of, actually the high priest is the one that's mentioned a lot. So most of this that we read in Exodus chapter 28 relates to the high priest. But it does. We do note that later on down in verse 40, this is Exodus 28:40. For Aaron's sons, you shall make tunics, you shall make sashes for them, you shall make hats for them for glory and beauty. So certainly the garments of all the priests, including Aaron's sons, were made for glory and beauty as well. But our purpose deals with this idea of glory and beauty. And we're also thinking about, as we move into the latter half of this lesson, the idea that we as Christians also put on garments. I would encourage you to be thinking about this as we go through the first part of the lesson, thinking about what as Christians we put on as garments. Because I will open it up more at that stage too, so hopefully you'll have some thoughts on that as well. As we begin in Exodus chapter 28, I don't necessarily plan to read verse by verse. Hopefully several of you have read through this. But if you haven't, we do have them up on our PowerPoint. We've kind of categorized them and so on. But what we're going to notice, actually, we'll glance briefly at verse 1. This is Exodus chapter 28, verse 1. Take Aaron your brother and his sons with him from among the children of Israel, that he may minister to me as priest. Aaron and Aaron's sons, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. Okay? And then it mentions, you shall make holy garments for Aaron your brother, for glory and for beauty. Now go down to verse 4. Down in verse 4, we have several of these things mentioned in particular. These are the things that are mentioned at verse 4. We're not going to take a look at every single one of these. The ones that are developed, in other words, there's a few verses about we'll take time to do. There's two or three that are mentioned at the very end. But in verse 4, you'll notice these are the garments which they shall make: a breastplate, an ephod, a robe, skillfully woven tunic, a turban, and a sash. So they shall make holy garments for Aaron, your brother, and his sons, that he may minister to me as a priest. So here, these are the areas that we're going to be looking at. These are our garments. Let's go on down and begin then looking at the highlights of this. In verses 5 to 14, we have the ephod discussed. Okay? Again, you can take time to read through this. I'm not going to read verse by verse at this moment. But let's look at some of the things that are mentioned here. When we talk about an ephod is a vest that's usually considered to be the outer garment, as I understood it. Now, the word actually was vestment. I'm assuming a vestment and a vest are the same thing. So we're talking about kind of an outer garment type vest is the ephod when you see that word. It mentions the things that it's made out of, gold and blue and purple and scarlet thread, and also linen. Okay, so there is an order. One of the values, I think, as we go through this, is we will see an order that's established for the priesthood. Not just the priesthood, but several things throughout these chapter 26, 27, and so on. There's an order that God establishes. I think too often in our world today, people lose the value of order. Whatever you think is okay, whatever I think is okay. But what we find here is God establishes an order. If they made, and when I say order here, I'm talking about a sequence of events or a way to do things. I'm not necessarily saying he was ordering them, although in a sense he was. As he gave instructions, he's saying, this is how you make this ephod. If you make it another way, you're not making it according to God's plan. And the same thing with the breastplate and so on. Okay? But we've got our ephod. We've got the way it's to be made with the threads and the linens. And here's another key part of it. We've got two onyx stones. And I'm going to be honest, I'm not an expert on some of the pronunciations of some of these stones. So if I say onyx and it's supposed to be onyx or, you know, some of these words, you can either forgive me or correct me, whichever you choose to do, and I'll be fine with either way. But one of the key things of this is these two onyx stones were established. They were to be put on the shoulders of Aaron. And you'll see that they were to be engraved with the names of the sons of Israel. So six were on one, and six were on the other, and they were put in their birth order. Okay? So those are some of the things that we've mentioned up here on our PowerPoint as well. And they shall be set in gold. Now, as this, you know, there's other verses throughout this. It basically kind of tells how everything is connected together. If you're going to have shoulders, if you're going to have stones on your shoulders, or, you know, on this vest, they're going to be visible, they're going to be seen, they need to be fastened in certain ways. And so some of the rest of this goes into describing how they were fastened together. Some of the rings that were used and so on. And that's why I'm not looking to go into every detail of that, but the onyx stones are certainly a key to this. Okay? These two stones are placed on the shoulders of the ephod. They are memorial stones for the sons of Israel. So as Aaron walks around with this vest on in doing his high priest duties, he is representing the children of Israel. He is bearing their names before the Lord as a memorial to him. Questions, comments, thoughts on the ephod here. This is one of the priestly garments. And always go back to remember the idea relates to the beauty of it and the glory of it as well. I'll continue on for now, but certainly you can make comments at any time too as we gather some of these together. Next, we'll look briefly at the breastplate of judgment. Okay? You'll notice back in verse 4, it was simply called a breastplate. As we move to, as it's discussed, beginning in verse 15, you shall make the breastplate of judgment. Now it begins to use the idea that it is the judgment piece of it as well. You'll notice that it's made of the same material, gold and blue and purple and scarlet thread, and also of fine linen. It's doubled into a square. Now, the square is a span. One of the things you'll notice, I did some research as to what a span is. And so basically, as I understand it, with a span is the distance from your thumb to the tip of your finger. Okay? And one resource I said that mentioned that was about 9 inches. In my own case, my span is 8.5 inches. But that's what you'll see. From the tip of the thumb to the tip of the little finger as it is extended. Again, you may have a different idea slightly. You may have a different resource that you've used, but that's what I'm understanding it. So by the time it was doubled over, it was, now a piece of paper is 8.5 by 11, right? So literally this is 8.5, and I made it a square, 8.5 by 8.5. If you picture, and again it could be just a little bit bigger than this, but this of course is going to be placed where? Over his breast. Okay? So it's going to be something about this size. Okay? So that's what we have. It's doubled into a square measuring one span. Now when it says it's doubled, in other words, could it have been 18 inches this way? My understanding is it probably was 18 inches and then it was doubled over to make it 9 inches. Now does that mean it was 18 inches square and doubled both ways or just doubled over once? I don't know, but by the time it was all said and done, it was a span approximately 9 inches by 9 inches. Okay? And you'll notice that there are four rows of stones that are placed in this, and they're in gold settings. It goes to talk about the rows. It mentions three rows. There's four rows, three at a time. Okay? So if you can picture across this, we have three stones that are established. Okay? And it mentions these three: sardis, topaz, emerald, turquoise, sapphire, diamond, jacinth, agate, amethyst, beryl, onyx, and jasper. You know, as I was studying this, I was thinking of another place in the New Testament where there are stones mentioned like this. Where is another place where there's 12 stones that are mentioned? Revelation. The New Jerusalem. Revelation chapter 21. The foundations of the wall. And I noticed that there were 12 of them. Now you'll notice, I'll go ahead and mention this briefly and then I'll go back to the other. Each stone had a name on it, which represented or which was one of the sons of Israel. Okay? And also the foundations in the new heaven, New Jerusalem, also represented these 12. You know, I compared, and I didn't choose to make a PowerPoint because I couldn't put 12 in a row, so I didn't put the 12, but When I took the New King James Version, eight of these mentioned here are the same as are mentioned over in Revelation chapter 21. My problem too is I'm not an expert with all of these. It could use a different word, but actually be a very similar meaning. It could be a synonym for it. In other words, it could be that all 12 of these precious stones were the same as were mentioned in Revelation 21. As I said, there was a direct match for 8 of them. I did the New King James, I think there were 7. I did the NIV, I think there were 8 also. Okay, but the thing is, the NIV and the New King James or the King James may use different words too. So, you know, as we're going through, you know, where this mentions sardis, topaz, emerald, some of the versions may have slightly different words. Again, it would be a very similar meaning. And that's why for me it became a little confusing as to trying to go in and deduct purposes for this. What is the value? Why does it mention sardis, topaz, and emerald? Did they have a special significance? So I didn't really delve into that piece of it. Does anybody have any research that you've done over the years or did for this class? Do you know or would you say that any of these 12 had any special significance that you're aware of?
I think they all... was a representation of the 12 tribes. And the priest would represent them, have them on him, representing them to God.
Exactly. Okay. So he was wearing on his shoulders the 12 sons, and he was wearing then on his breastplate, the breastplate of judgment, the names of the 12 sons as well. This again was for glory and for beauty. So the significance of these are that they showed the glory and the beauty. As far as the significance of each particular one, I'm not positive. Okay? They shall be over Aaron's heart before the Lord. Now, I might just mention, as far as this vest goes and this breastplate, my understanding or my thought of this as I read through this is this breastplate would have been inside the vest, not on the outside. Maybe you have a different understanding. I'll just mention the reason I came up with this is in the 26th verse, you shall make two rings of gold and put them on the two ends of the breastplate, on the edge of it, which is on the inner side of the ephod. So I took that, the inner side, to being inside the ephod. Verse 27, and two other rings of gold you shall make and put them on the two shoulder straps underneath the ephod, toward its front. So those two words, one spoke about the inner side and the one spoke about underneath the ephod, So my understanding is, as someone saw Aaron approaching them wearing this, they would not see the breastplate. The breastplate would be inside. It would be near to his heart. He is bearing before the Lord. He is bearing, keeping these tribes, these people, representing them near his heart. I will also briefly mention about the Urim and Thummim, and you may say it a little different as well. Right today, I'm just going to briefly mention that it mentions that they were placed inside. Next week, I think we will take a little time to delve into this. Right now, for me, I'm just going to make a couple of comments. These were used for big decisions. This was this helped to discern God's will. God gave them this Urim and Thummim to, again, be able to help discern His will for big decisions. Okay? And that's part of why this is called the breastplate of judgment. Comments or thoughts on either the ephod or the breastplate?
Question on that. I'm envisioning those four things, you know, over his chest. And then the Urim and Thummim. So do you visualize these as layers, you know, like the one right on top of the other one? Is that how you see it? Or?
The Urim and Thummim was inside. This basically had formed a pouch. As it was doubled over, there was a pouch kind of that was placed inside. Now, so when you say the layer, are you saying, I mean, here we have the breastplate, which is made of these threads and fine linen, and then basically in gold settings, these stones were placed, attached to it. I don't know that there would have been layers. I mean, it would have had a little thickness because of that. That's as thick as I would see it.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, so I'm envisioning these four stones. Of course,
there are four rows.
They may just be little. Well, they got the names attached to them, but we don't really know how big or round they were, or square or whatever.
I mean, we can visualize simply by about the size of it.
Right.
You would need three across and four down.
So, I guess here's my question.
You have 12 stones, 12, essentially.
Sorry, yeah.
Right.
Then where does the Urim and Thummim?
Again, it says they were placed inside. If you, where is that at? Let's see. Verse 30. You shall put in the breastplate of judgment the Urim and the Thummim, and they shall be over Aaron's heart when he goes in before the Lord. Again, it says you shall put in the breastplate of judgment. This was doubled over, if you remember. This had been apparently 19 or 18 inches this way.
Right.
It was doubled.
Okay.
Okay? And that was back in the early verses. Okay? I mentioned it. If you want to go back and see it in the Bible, verse 16, it shall be doubled.
That they laid inside that whole deal.
Yes. And of course, all of this was... several of these other verses talk about how everything is put together. So they were put together so nothing was going to fall out. Again, it may be that this was folded twice, both lengthwise and depthwise. I mean, it may have been folded both ways to form a pouch. But the other verses are describing how it was placed here, how it was held in place, how the shoulder pads of the ephod was held in place. All of these, really there was very little possibility of them coming out. Again, they were made by people a lot more skilled than me.
So. But we don't know if those were stones. This Urim, we don't know what it is.
Well, essentially, you're right. I mean, it doesn't give us a whole lot of information about exactly what it was. Verse 30, you shall put in the breastplate of judgment the Urim and the Thummim. They shall be over Aaron's heart. There are other places that this is used. It doesn't really go into the details of exactly what it was. Okay. Again, next week we will spend a little bit more time on it. So if anybody wants to do some research between now and then, feel free to do it. Karen?
So these precious stones, were they expected to find them? Would they have brought them with them from Egypt? Are these native to the area that they were in? Or how did they, you know, I mean...
I did not go through and read from chapter 20 through chapter 28, but I'm pretty sure somewhere in here, they were at the mountain, right? And Moses had then asked them to bring a lot of different things to him. And so he tells in chapter 26 how they were to make the tabernacle, how they were to do these things. The people had, from Egypt, they had brought several things with them. All the people corporately, whatever, together, they had had a lot of different things, and they brought them together to put these together. So they may have got them from Egypt. I don't know exactly where they were getting them, but I'm pretty sure somewhere in these, within these chapters, and if anybody, I had read that somewhere in my other readings, but I didn't go back and actually read it from the scripture. Okay?
Didn't they take from the Egyptians a lot of jewelry and stuff?
They took great treasure out of Egypt. That's they took all the stuff they made out of gold and silver. And, I mean, they took material, clothing, jewelry, you know, and raw. And I'm sure they would have taken precious stones along as well.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not saying that those were what they used, but I'm not saying it's not either. It very well could be that they took it from Egypt.
My impression then, Karen, would be that it came with them from Egypt. Some of them they may have already had anyway. Some of them they may have taken as the bounty as they left. Some of them the Egyptians may have given them as they left. That would be my impression. Now, again, I didn't really look at verse 3 a whole lot in chapter 28, but it talks about the gifted artisans that would be doing this. So they're bringing special people in. Now, not from outside, but the people of the Israelites who were very gifted in this, they would have had knowledge about how to come up with this too, I think, and then put it all together.
When you live in a country for hundreds of years and your people have become so skilled to do all of this, well, what are you dealing with? You have to have the material to learn how to make these things.
Right.
You know, whether it's pottery or jewelry or whatever it is, things made out of wood. So they were familiar with all these things.
It would seem so.
These stones are they're a lot different than just your everyday rocks that you find. You know, you don't see anything up there like a sandstone or, you know what I'm saying? Those are all real special, precious stones that a lot of times I think they have to mine some of that stuff way down deep in the earth. But, I mean, like I say, I don't know, but I get that impression.
Right.
I think that was the idea. They're precious. They represent something really precious. And all of those are, you know, we know are valuable and takes a lot of money to buy them. So they're considered very precious.
But my impression would be they had them with them already from Egypt. But if they didn't, they could have gone somewhere and mined it and so on.
If they didn't, God provided it somehow.
Right. And I would point out, chapters 38 and 39 and 40 then talk about him actually putting these things together. The building of it itself is discussed. 38 discusses the tabernacle. 39 talks about the garments. That talks about actually the making of it. Now, most of this simply goes ahead and correlates and corresponds to what we're reading back in 28. But if you ever want to go forward into 39 and 40, it talks about when they actually made it. Let's continue on for now. We'll go on down into the robe. Verses 31 to 35. It mentioned that it was a blue robe. I didn't choose to write that down. All I put as far as some of the highlights on the hem of it would be pomegranates and bells. Now, for me, I'm not that familiar with pomegranates. I don't think about pomegranates being for glory and for beauty. But at that time, it was. As a matter of fact, I've got a couple of verses here that let's go read. Okay, it's speaking about the glory and beauty of pomegranates. Turn with me, if you will, to Deuteronomy chapter 8. And the reason I'm turning here is we know that this was called a land of promise. It was a land that flowed with milk and honey. And the pomegranates were included among the things that were listed. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 7 to 9. Would someone read those three verses? And pomegranates is mentioned in it.
For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains, of springs flowing out in the valleys and hills, the land of wheat, the barley, the vines, and fig trees, and pomegranates, the land of olive trees and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills you will dig copper.
All right. So, as he describes this land of promise, this land that flowed with milk and honey, a very good land, one of the things mentioned within it is pomegranates. So, that was adding to the significance of it. I'll also go forward to Song of Solomon. I'm going to read the first verse here. You'll notice I have it up there. If you'd like to turn with me here, you may. Song of Solomon, chapter 4, verse 1. Just to kind of get a context. Behold, you are fair, my love. Behold, you are fair. You have dove's eyes behind your veil. I'll stop there in verse 1, but it's going. You can see what it's doing, describing this bride. And then verse 3. Your lips are like a strand of scarlet, and your mouth is lovely. Your temples behind your veil are like a piece of pomegranate. So as Solomon is writing about the beauty of this woman, one of the things he does is compare her temples behind her veil to a piece of pomegranate. Again, I've used this simply to show kind of the beauty that was represented in other places in the Bible. And so when we talk about the glory and the beauty of the robe that the high priest would wear, the pomegranate was appropriate to use for that as well, the beauty side. For its sweetness. So the taste as well. Very good. Okay. And of course we then had the bells as well. And so with the bells and the pomegranates on the hymn, as Aaron walked, you could visually see the beauty of the robe. And then of course as he walked and the bells were there, the bells sounded. So as Aaron ministered to the Lord, as he went into the holy place, as he came out of the holy place, he didn't go quietly. The bells announced where he was and what he was doing. One thing I didn't mention there, I don't believe. Let's see, Exodus 28, get back to the right spot here. Verse 35, and it shall be upon Aaron when he ministers, and the sound will be heard when he goes into the holy place before the Lord, when he comes out, that he may not die. Okay? So, of course, there was a certain way he was to go about doing things in there. This allowed people to know where he was when he was in the holy place and the most holy place, that he may not die. Other questions or comments on that? We've had the ephod, we've had the breastplate, we've had the robe, and those are mentioned quite a bit. Now the turban is also mentioned, not really a whole lot. So let's make sure we understand where we're coming from on this. Let's briefly read verses 36 to 38. Would someone go ahead and read those three verses, please?
You shall also make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it like the engraving of a signet, holiness to the Lord. And you shall put it on a blue cord that may be on the turban. It shall be on the front of the turban. So it shall be on Aaron's forehead, that Aaron may bear the iniquity of the holy things which the children of Israel hallow in all their holy gifts. And it shall always be on his forehead, that they may be accepted.
All right. So there was this turban that was also made. A mitre, some versions say. A diadem, other versions say. So we've got a particular headpiece that Aaron, as high priest, was to wear. I didn't include on this, really, the fact that it was on, that this engraving and the holiest to the Lord was on the turban. So that's why I wanted to make sure I read this. I did choose, though, to focus especially on this plate. Verse 36, you shall make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it, like the engraving of a signet, holiness to the Lord. Now, as we think about this, Aaron was in the middle. Aaron represented, here's God, we'll go like this, here's God, here's the people, and here's Aaron. Aaron represented God to the people. So in a sense, God's holiness is coming down through Aaron, and Aaron is then transferring that or translating that, sharing that with the people. Aaron represented God's holiness to the people. But was the reverse also true? And here I won't use the word holiness, but was Aaron representing the people to God as well? As Aaron walked about in the holy place and had the shoulders with the names of the children of Israel, he was representing them before God. As he had them on his breastplate, he was representing the people. So it's interesting to note that Aaron represented the holy God to the people, and then Aaron represented the people to God. Now in the middle I also have the way he did, one of the ways that he represented God to the people, was he taught them about God. You see, when it says holiness to the Lord, and I know one other version said holy to the Lord. It's interesting to me, holiness to the Lord and holy to the Lord can signify a little bit different. So I didn't really try to get into the details of that. I'm kind of just trying to show both ways. As God taught them, as Aaron taught them about God, he's teaching them about the holiness of God. But not only is he teaching them about the holiness of God, but it's because of that holiness that he's teaching them how they also need to live holy before God as well. Okay? So as I say there, he taught them about God and holy living. Okay? But then also, that's how he was representing God to the people. But on the reverse side, he was also trying to be that mediator for the people to God. And one of the ways he was doing that was to atone for their sins. He offered sacrifices to atone for their sins. So this mitre and this plate on it, when it says holy to the Lord or holiness to the Lord, it may have designated the fact that Aaron as priest was holy to the Lord. It may have designated the fact that God himself was holy. It may have designated the fact that the people needed to be holy. However it was, holiness needed to go both ways, right? And so I'm not trying to take either explanation and say this is the for sure explanation. To me, I think it's true that it goes both ways. Comments or thoughts of what you've considered before or what you consider now about holiness, this phrase, and this headpiece?
I think you're probably going to talk about the types and shadows, but I mean, this is a type of Christ. And when we read in 1 Peter, the second chapter, verse 24, where it talks about that he will bear the iniquities of the people. He's the mediator, just like everything you were saying makes us think of our Lord Christ down.
Right. And later, I mean, right now we're emphasizing especially the garments themselves, but if you remember kind of the list of things we will talk about the high priesthood of Aaron and the high priesthood of Christ and kind of bringing them together. Comments, thoughts?
We know for sure that the people were instructed to be holy. You know, Peter, I didn't look it up, but be ye holy as I am holy. And that's really a quote from an Old Testament scripture too.
And that was one of the responsibilities of the priests, in this case, the high priest. And of course, Moses had taught them before the priesthood was established.
It's interesting that the Old Testament talks about all these pieces of gold and the value is there. And in the New Testament, none of it has to do with the gold you possess. Or the diamonds, and you're not to dress as they did.
So are you saying that the beauty and the glory of the priests take a different form under the New Testament?
Yes.
I agree. I thought we would be able to spend more time with that this morning. We're not really going to get into that a whole lot this morning then. We will cover that next week, but that is one of the main things that we'll be covering on. Actually, we could move into that area, or we could continue. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes here. First, I'll just kind of continue to come back to this. Let's continue on down with this. There's really, the rest of the way through, it speaks very briefly. If you'll remember back in verse 4, there were several things that were mentioned. We've covered a few. We have not covered the tunic. We've not covered the sash. But it just mentions them very briefly. Early on this morning, I had mentioned verse 40. It talks about Aaron's sons also would be made these garments that would be made for glory and beauty. Verse 41, you shall put them on Aaron your brother and on his sons. You shall anoint them, consecrate them, sanctify them, that they may minister to me as priests. Okay? goes on to tell a little bit more about linen trousers that they would put on to cover their nakedness. When they went in to minister before the Lord, they were to make sure they wore linen trousers also.
Now, when you anoint someone, it's pouring oil on their head. Is that right?
That's the way anointing was often done in the Old Testament, yes.
This would get all over these garments. So as the years go down and they wear all this, it has to be the garments. What would they look like after a while?
I mean, I would have to remember whether they were anointed first or put in the garments first. I mean, if they were anointed before, and I haven't read through that to guarantee. That'd be a good research project for any and all of us to do. I started to say for you to do. I don't know. I'll need to research that too. I don't know.
The one thing we know is that the children of Israel were in the wilderness for 40 years and never had their shoes wore out or clothing. So that's really would be no task at all for the, these things to last for as long as God wanted them.
I don't think the Bible is going. I don't think the Bible tells us about making a different one. So I think that ultimately is speculation, one way or the other. I don't know for sure whether they did, but I appreciate. I'm sorry.
Verse 42, for example, the linen undergarments.
You would think that some of these garments may have been made again. Again, with people who were very skilled with what they did, they needed to treat this and handle this very, very in a sacred manner. If they would have handled this in a sacred manner, I wouldn't be surprised if some of these garments were made again at a different time. Yes.
Well, one thing for sure we know is that, you know, when Aaron went into the most holy place, he sprinkled blood around. You can't mess with blood and not get it on. And so just think of all the different times, you know, if he went in there once a year, you know, there's going to be blood on what he's wearing. It's going to get on him to some extent.
Right.
And but, you know, that was part of, you know, where we might think, well, that's nasty. Well, that's not what God called. The blood was for a purpose and for a reason. And that's what God wanted.
Right.
And so if there was blood stains on things and they were supposed to be there, then that was pleasing to God.
I agree. Let's take 1 minute here to kind of summarize some things and point out next week. Next week we will then talk about the glory and the beauty that we are clothed with. We'll take some time about Christian priests. Let me come also. We will spend some time talking about the Urim and the Thummim. And we may also be able to get into consecration of priests, depending on how time goes. Let me also mention, I plan to be here the next two Sundays. I'm scheduled to be in Murray Road on the first Sunday of August. So I'm sharing this now. Hopefully I will have a volunteer. By next Sunday, somebody might mention if they'll be able to teach the class on, I think it's August 3rd, whatever the first Sunday of August is. I'll make sure that I'll try to at least make sure that the week before I have that lesson prepared. A person could use the notes that I have done. They could use their own notes and do it however they choose, or they could choose a totally different topic. But we will need another teacher on the first Sunday of August. Okay? Thanks for your attention.